Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. It is March 12th, 8 a.m., and it's maybe 7 a.m. on some of your clocks, but it is 8 a.m. on mine. We're here downtown Reading, KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 a.m., your talk radio. I am Kevin Cry. That was Billy Joel, My Life, and this is my show. And I'm so glad to be back on the radio since haven't got to do it in this capacity since the primary and the general election, but I am back now sitting as the Shasta County Supervisor of District 1. I've got a couple great guests here, but before we get to them, Liam, what's our weather look like for those still in bed?
Yeah, so we have a high of 54.
And good morning, Liam.
Good morning. We have a high of 54 today. Rain all day, and rain is going to continue through Wednesday. We are also on a flood watch. But other than that, yeah, get your umbrella, get your rain boots.
Absolutely.
Because it's not letting up.
That's right. It's good, but it's so good for us. We need so much rain, and I'm so thankful for it. One of the things with daylight savings, and I guess we sprung forward. My mom texted me at 10:20 last night and said, "Hey, Kevin, don't forget tomorrow's daylight savings. Set your clocks forward." And kind of laugh when I woke up and saw the text because I was long in bed. But my mom thinks that I'm like getting with a pocket watch and I'm setting it and I'm going around setting the VCR clock. We are so digital anymore. Everything sets itself. So, Mom, I know you're listening because you don't really miss anything I ever do. Thank you for that text at 10:20 at night. And thankfully, I only had to fix the stove or the microwave. And when I say I meant I'm going to have one of the kids do it. So I am here in studio with a couple new friends of mine that I've met over the past year. I have a gentleman, Robert Sid. He goes by Robert Sid. That might be a pseudonym. I don't know. He could be a superhero. And then I have a Mr. Steve Cohn. Both of which I've met throughout the process of running for office. And I will say, yesterday we were down at Martin Luther King Park. I hadn't seen Steve there before, but we took a really long walk. And we've talked off and on about trying to get together. He wasn't a supporter of mine. And Robert was, then wasn't, then was again. So Robert and I have had an on-again, off-again, like high school girl relationship kind of thing where we broke up and went back out. But and Robert and I are good. But what I want to do, what I want this show to be about is I want this to be about bringing people from different views together who have the same common goal, which is making Shasta County the best place it can be. And I think Shasta County is a terrific place. I love it. I plan on dying here, not in the studio, but in Shasta County in many, 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 many years. My oldest daughter's getting married this summer. It looks like she's going to set roots here. And she got a job down in the Cascade School District, so it looks like I've got a great shot at having my oldest and her family in town. So Shasta County, I'm committed to and have been committed to. So before I introduce Robert and Steve again, I just want to say also we're going to allow some call-ins, and we're going to take a couple subjects. I think the subjects we're going to try and tackle today, and again, these can be 10-hour shows just on one topic, but we're going to hit on the homeless, unsheltered, mental health, drug addiction crisis we have here in Shasta County on the first half hour, and then the back half, we're going to talk a little bit about voting and voting machines, voting processes. And again, that's going to be only 30 minutes, but those are things right now that are important to Shasta County voters, I feel, and it's obviously on our agenda pretty frequently lately. So if you want to call in, the number is 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. If you do want to call in, just know you're going to have just like 1 minute, 2 minutes, and then we'll discuss. We'll keep you on, but just please be respectful that we want to get to as many callers as we can. So, Steve, Robert, introduce yourselves.
Steve Cohn, born here.
Cohn, see, I didn't pronounce your name right.
Oh, that's all right. You probably pronounced it correctly. It was changed when my grandfather came to the United States. But, born here, lived here all my life, got involved in going to the council meetings and supervisor meetings almost 6 years ago now because I was very concerned with the crime situation. It just didn't seem like my hometown. So that's been my main focus, and, of course, that crosses through into drug addiction, mental health issues, and homelessness. So that's where I'm at.
Got it. Robert.
Yeah, hey, Robert Sid here from the mean streets of East Los Gatos. Moved up here about 3 years ago with the missus to take advantage of the beautiful real estate prices. And have a home here, and I do a little work part-time. Keeps me off the streets, and I'm very active in the community with the Board of Supervisors, with my friend Steve here, who we don't always agree on everything, but we're friends, and that's the tenor I like to take.
Great. So I'll start it off back in, and I know I had Brenda on, I want to say probably somewhere around July or August, and we had talked a little bit about the lack of housing, or what we believed to be the lack of housing in Shasta County. So for me, right after the primary in June, I had promised Monique Willeen, who is a frequent visitor to council and board meetings, that I would go out and see what she does at MLK Park. And I've been out there at least two or three, sometimes all four, Saturday mornings since then, and that was July. And I'll tell you, I've learned an absolute lot in that process. One of the things I've learned is there are a lot of people that care about the unsheltered, unhoused. And I use both terms because I don't want to ever come across as insensitive, because the word homeless now has become a lightning rod. And for me, I'm not the most politically correct guy, but I want to be really sensitive. And there's people that absolutely need help, and we have to get them that help. And I ran on that. One of the things I've learned is there are a lot of people that care, and they just want to do something. And I think what's important now in the 7, 8, 9 months I've been out there is I think I've learned enough, and I've met enough people and saw enough people throughout this time I have a base of knowledge now that I think there's some directions we want to go in. One of the things I've really been working on is I've been working on privatizing it. I've been slowly trying to raise about $2.5 million from private donors, because I think personally the issue there's three issues, but one, there's the mental health aspect, there's the drug addicted aspect, and there's some people that just don't really want help. Right after I got elected on a Tuesday, that next Wednesday morning, I met with Laura Birch and a lot of her team, and she now has teams coming down to MLK Park on Saturday mornings helping people with housing. There are some people that refuse to fill out their paperwork for CalFresh, and they refuse to get help. And those are the ones that I don't really have a lot of sympathy for, because they want to camp. And one reason they're allowed to do that, or I won't say allowed to do that, one reason they can do that and get by is because they're provided tarps, tents, blankets, clothes, and plenty of food. I mean, there's individuals out there that have gained literally 20, 30 pounds since I've been out there. I mean, they're gaining weight, and they're, quote-unquote, technically homeless. So I really think this has to be privatized, and this has to be taken out of a government thing, and we have to rally churches and private citizens to start, I want to say, putting our foot down and saying, look, we have to address the elephant in the room that we're exacerbating this problem. I mean, Steve, what did you see? You came out yesterday. What are your thoughts?
The same thing. I in fact, that's why I have been down to the Martin Luther Park a couple of times now, was to get an idea of what is going on down there. And I think a majority that aren't going to get help or aren't getting help have drug addiction problems. And I'm not sure exactly how we change that situation, because they can maintain their drug habit if they stay in a tent and stay camping. And so that's one of my biggest concerns, and it's complex. And I think many times they're using assistance money that they get in order to maintain that habit. And so that makes it very difficult. It makes it that may not be a popular view, but it's reality. So
Yeah, I've actually asked, and one of the things about the group at MLK Park, there's really no technical leader because we're just a motley crew of volunteers trying to do some different things. Now, Councilman Mazzano, or Vice Mayor Mazzano, he actually secured a permit. So the stovetop they're using to cook the food, I mean, they're going down that road, but really there's no leader in terms of jurisdictionally to say, hey, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're not going to do. There's a gentleman named Jerry Harrell. I mean, I love the guy. He has one of the biggest hearts. And he'll tell you he's a recovering addict. Has lived a very, very, when I say tough life, we've all lived a tough life, but he'll tell you that he's come out the other side and he, you know, picks up that cross daily and just moves it forward to do the right thing and help people. And he says, a lot of times, some of the things he does, you know, like, it feeds his soul. And so he used to bring just truckloads of clothes, but now, and supplies. And we've seen they're filling up massive dumpsters, and there's clothes in that creek that were given out just a couple days before. So he's cut way back on that. And I can't make him, nor can anybody else, not help individuals, but it's contributing to the problem. So there's an organization called the Other Side Academy, which I've been following really closely. I've actually talked to some of the leaders, some of the people that spearhead that. They've done TED Talks. One of the things that they really, really stand behind, and I totally agree with, is a work program. That I don't think there's anything more fulfilling for a man or a woman than to work, pay their own way. And I think when that gets instilled in young people early, I think that sets them up for the best path in life. I mean, my son's 11 years old. He does some chores. Everybody's kids, I'm sure, do chores. But now we're starting to – personally, I'm making sure, you know, from a work ethic standpoint, kids understand, like, you work, you eat. And that's – and now I'm not talking about the people that can't mentally hold a job or do something. I don't know. That's way different. But the people that want some help, that want to get a job, I think we have to, or I know we have to have some programs in place. And I, as a business in Reading, I would definitely hire. I mean, I really like to hire vets when I can, and I really like to hire people that are just trying to get on their feet. So that's what the Other Side Academy is about. And I'm going to be talking more about that in the coming weeks. So, Robert, what have you seen? You've been coming out there quite a while.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of golden hearts who have really given of themselves. Monique being probably the biggest one, Jerry, and then Skippy, you know. And Skippy is like the closest thing, as my friend Marv says, to Santa Claus. He's very, very benevolent and very philanthropic and just gives everything that he has. I think, though, that sometimes, like you were saying, Kevin, we can be enabling the problem rather than actually systemically fixing it. And ultimately, the answer isn't going to be, you know, to go out there once a week and feed and everything. It has to be a comprehensive solution. It has to be a solution where the county's involved, where you know, it's a private venture. But the county, as far as the housing goes, but I agree with you as far as privatization of it.
I was going to say, because we have to take a break here. I think the more we get government out of things and put this back on the private citizens, there's a lot of people that want to, whether they're reporters as writers or bloggers or vloggers or Facebook, you know, warriors or whatever. I think there's a lot of people that talk about it. I think it's time for people to step up, but a plan getting in place and say, hey, this is the plan. Get on board or stop complaining.
Right.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. If you want to call in, 530-605-4567. We'll be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
George Harrison, I Got My Mind Set On You. Actually, I listened to that song a ton, Walking Neighborhoods. And for me, I had to literally keep my mind set on why I was doing it. Because when it was 110 degrees in July or August or early September, it was really about keeping my mind set on really wanting to see sustainable change, positive change for Shasta County. And so I like that song. And because it's my show, I made sure I put it in there. So I want to say also quickly, this Thursday night, I'm going to do my first town hall roundtable of sorts. It's going to be at 1475 Placer Street, Suite D. It's lit from within. It's a yoga studio. So 1475 Placer Street, Suite D, lit from within. It starts at 6:30. If you want to go to that, you have to be a District 1 resident, and we'll have to show proof of residency, and then go on votekevincry.com. Again, votekevincry.com to register for that, as it will be limited seating. Okay, so we're back talking about the situation we have, not just across, of course, Shasta County or California, but just the whole country of people that are unhoused and that need some help. And we're just talking about some different ideas. So, Robert, you were talking a little bit more about your ideas about privatization, what your thoughts are. Go ahead.
Yeah, so first things first, I mean, I think that the Reading Restart thing was good. I think it was a lot of good information there. But I think it should have been opened up a little bit more to have the director of housing and the director of HHSA there, because they're really the ones who are involved in the housing component of it. I think the mission does a great job. I think, Hill Country does a great job. Big fan of Chief Shuler and RPD. I just think it would have been a better forum to have it, where we could ask questions and then have follow-ups versus having submitted questions and then having no chance to follow up. So I would have preferred it be more informal, more maybe tables out, and you could talk to people. And there may have been. I left at halftime, so I don't know if they had that after that.
But and, Steve, you came as well?
I had to work in the morning in Red Bluff, and I raced back as fast as I could, but by the time I got there at about 11 o'clock, it was kind of winding down. I just basically made some contact with some people afterwards. But
yeah, one of the things for me, and I actually had coffee with Jonathan Anderson on Thursday, and you know when he had told me that it was coming, you know, and him and I had a pretty pointed discussion. It was a text exchange at first, but then it became just an exchange of, you know, I was really frustrated that Laura Birch wasn't invited, not as a Shasta County supervisor, but just as a citizen. I mean, you're talking with somebody that, or you're leaving somebody out that has access to roughly $300 million, and to not be included, just, you know. And I told Jonathan, I'll be honest, I said, dude, it just feels like virtue signaling, like doing a big meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so when I met with him, I said, hey, what did you learn that you didn't already know? And he said, well, really not much. And I said, okay. And he did have some thoughts, but, like, for me, a lot of this really isn't – I mean, the things we're dealing with aren't new. They're bigger and there's more, but a lot of this really isn't new. So, you know, I would like to say, you know, like, let's define what success looks like. Like, what is success? And when I asked him that, and that's one of the interesting things, is the people I talk to who are running nonprofits or facilitating different groups or organizations, if you ask what does success look like, there's no two answers alike. And a lot of times it just bleeds over into the feel-good stuff. Well, feel-good stuff doesn't get it done. Steve, you had a comment?
Well, I was going to say, plus, what we know is this situation has only continued to get worse. So whatever is going on at this time is not reducing the problem. It is continuing to expand. So your programs, what you're thinking about with working programs or whatever, innovative things we can come up with, we have to try something that is actually going to impact the situation in a positive way, because it's just continuing to get worse.
Yeah, there is Dr. Drew Pinsky. He speaks nationally. I was working on bringing him here, and then of course we had the event just recently at the Civic. So I stopped that. Wanted to see how that went. And so I'm retooling that back up. I'm pretty adamant about bringing him as well as individuals from the Other Side Academy in, but not just coming in to talk about it, but in to say, like, here's the plan. Here's the money that we need. Here's the money that I and others have raised. Because I said along during the campaign, I'm kind of like all these candidates in the primary and the general. So if you put it both together, I mean, raised well over $1 million. I mean, for local elections, when it normally costs 30 or 40 grand to run for an office, people were raising, you know, $150 and more to run for offices. So I'm like, geez, if we put that energy for a year or two, everybody raising money, I mean, we could come up with the money needed very, very quickly. Now, the tough part is the bureaucracy. Is the bureaucracy going to get in the way? Because I know Jonathan had mentioned that they're trying to get kennels for animals at the Good News Rescue Mission, because I hear that a lot. People say, I can't take my pets there. And he said he's been working on it, and it's been like a four-year process. And I'm just kind of like, you know, can we speed that up, City of Reading? I mean, you know, and I think the public pressure part, once we know exactly what needs to happen, I think that's how this has to move. Now, it doesn't matter sometimes with public pressure, because councilmen or council people and board members are going to vote the way they want, and I don't even get into the REU stuff at the City of Reading. But, you know, it's not – everybody, Robert, you're nodding your head. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, well, just as far as bringing it back to the privatization aspect of it, I was vice president of St. Vincent de Paul through a parish in Santa Clara for years, and special projects manager mostly. And we would have, you know, we would do intake. We would interview people who were living on the streets or just those in need. And we would refer them out to services. We weren't a social services agency, but we had a food pantry and things like that. But we didn't actually, we would give money if it were like vouchers and things like that, if it were really necessary. If it was a single mom with a kid that needed diapers, sure. And even pet food. But the thing is, really, you had to boil it down to, okay, you're homeless. And you want money for a storage shed. Okay, you don't have a home, or you're going to lose your house, but you need to keep paying for your storage shed. It's just facing reality and saying, you know, you can't really afford this. It's not sustainable. Our old president Charlie used to say, you can't fund a sinking ship. And you know, if you're throwing money after these things, what about next month when the storage shed rent comes due? You know, you have to make hard choices, and I think hard choices is what we don't want to face sometimes.
Yeah, and I think what we need is we need more leaders in this capacity. And when I mean leaders, I'm not talking about it if you're elected or the head of an organization, but I mean leaders just in terms of somebody who is retired or not retired and says, hey, I want to lean into the situation. Because I mean, a leader is a little league coach, someone who's coaching an 8 to 10-year-old little league team. That's right. A leader that steps up and says, hey, there's no coach, I'm going to do it. So we need more leaders actually to start getting involved where their paycheck doesn't come from it, where they say, hey, this is something I believe and I'm going to lean into it. And that's what we have to do. We have to rally the people together and start putting these committees together. And it's so fractured. The community of this situation is so fractured. But I think if somebody just runs out in front and says, hey, this is what we're doing, get on board or stop complaining or go do something else on your own, that's what I plan to do. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm hoping this Thursday at the town hall, I get some people in District 1, because District 1 has 80 to 90% of the unhoused population in that particular district. I mean, there aren't a lot of people, from what I've been told, in District 5 anymore. Anderson has cleaned that up, and you could go back and forth of how that happened or why that happened, but they don't have many people because there's not a lot of services down there anymore, and they're in Reading. And so we have to fix it. So I would really encourage people. And again, this was just a very, very brief discussion of where my mind is. But of course, you can always come to any board meeting during public comment and let me know what you think. But I want to keep this conversation going because we have to fix this. There's nothing positive about individuals. And I don't even care if you're choosing to sleep in the snow. That's not good. Mm-hmm. So, and I would go as far as to say there's some mental health underlying things if you're choosing to sleep in the snow. So, Robert, real quick, we're going to take a break in 10 seconds. So go ahead.
Yeah, just the idea of conservatorship with the new law, it may make that easier where you just actually can't make a decision for yourself and you need that extra help.
Correct. Yes, no, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we're going to jump into kind of a big topic right now in terms of voting. So we'll be right back.
And now the Real Estate Minute brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
We are back. Traveling Wilburys. That, again, song from my campaign. Listen to that all the time in October because I saw the light at the end of the tunnel wrapping up a long, long year of walking neighborhoods and campaigning. So what I loved about that is that last line there where it said you can sit around and wait for the phone to ring. And so many people want to say their piece, complain, and they're do-nothings. They're do-nothings. They don't do anything. And that's what I always kind of thought about. You can sit around and wait for the phone to ring. And as I listen to that, it's like, no, I'm going to do something. And these two gentlemen with me in studio, Steve and Rob, are doing something as well. They're out there. They're doing it. It looks like we have a call. Liam?
I know that we're moving on from topics. The conversations around homelessness are always directed at, like, the people who are, like, you know, on drugs and, like, immediately living on the street or camping in the woods. Housing pricing in Reading is, like, astronomical, and it's not really going down. And I have friends who are working, like, 40-hour weeks and sleeping in cars. And I know that it's such a complex issue, but how do we even go about solving something like that?
You know what, that and I'll tell you, Liam, that's a great question. That's and I love the fact it's coming from in the studio and not a call. But I think that's the conversation is those are the individuals that I really want to help almost more than anybody is because they're trying to do or they are doing the right thing. They're working. They're doing something positive. And again, I want to segue out the individuals with mental health issues because drug addiction, mental health are two different things. They're not always siloed. And that's a great thing, Liam. So here's what I tell you. On Thursday, if you can have any of those friends, and I might actually make a special thing. If you have two or three, because, you know, I appreciate that. I would like someone to actually maybe come and talk a little bit about that if they'd want to be put on the spot about that, because there will be people from housing, from HHSA, not on the clock. They're actual residents of District 1, and they want to come, and they want to hear solutions, and they want to hear things that they can do privately, and then, again, when they put their work boots on and go to work to help in that situation. But you're right. It's getting more and more expensive to live here, and it's not good.
Yeah,
it's not good, but
it's just the reality.
Well, it is the reality. And one of the things is, like, I would love to live in Newport Beach. I would love it, but my vocation does not allow me to live in Newport Beach.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm not saying any tough cookies to people that want to live here and can't afford it. But, you know, that's where people may need to look, into other communities on the fringe of Reading. But that's a whole another topic, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Liam, so thank you.
Of course.
Anything else you guys want to add before we transition a little bit?
Go ahead.
The one thing I wanted to say is that there are some programs that are actually getting some people off the street. And the CERT program Chief Schuler from the city of Reading has been implementing, I guess there's four units out there, now have referred quite a few people and got them housed. And I saw the result of that at one of the council meetings as they walked out. Chief Schuler greeted them. He knew them. He was involved in helping getting them off the street in some cases. And that system, that situation is working with some of the people that have some of the greatest problems, because the search team, you know, has responded. So there's something going on there. The other thing is, like Kevin and Mark Mazzano, they've been in the streets. Mm-hmm. They've been there working with individuals and guiding them to get them off the street. We need more of that, but these guys are doing it. They're walking the walk, and I have great respect for that.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I think we have six or seven units. I won't say people, because one of the units, Angela, who was the very first person that when I got HHSA to come out and set up a little – I wouldn't call it a kiosk, just, you know, set up at a park bench out at MLK, get them housing. She was the very first one, her boyfriend, and his daughter. So three of them are now in a motel. There's a gentleman we met yesterday, Mike, who I didn't even know that he's now at the Capri waiting for housing. So he's one of the six or seven, and I didn't know him by name because I wasn't there when he did his paperwork. Do we have a call, Liam?
Yeah.
Okay. Stones, you're on.
Yeah, good morning. I know you guys were going to move on to some voting stuff, but I hope, you know, with being in the middle of machine contracts right now, the voting machines, hopefully we can get the public on board with doing some hand counting. You know, prior to the machines, we did hand counting, and everything worked just fine. And unfortunately, I think people, they got too lazy with the machines, right? Because machines are good things. They do speed up, you know, certain processes, and they issue reports in a timely fashion and all that. And I get that. But unfortunately, I think a lot of us that are paying attention to all of the news, not just some of it, are seeing that the great concerns with the machines. So we're hoping we can get some hand counting done. It is absolutely very possible. The laws and procedures are already in place. So it's just a matter of changing the paradigm.
Okay, Stones, why don't you stay on the line, and then Liam let us know if he gets bumped. But I've got two people here shaking their heads no, and I'm shaking my head yes. And this is what's great, is the dialogue. So, Steve, go ahead.
Stones, we haven't been hand counting. I know Supervisor Jones stated that we hand counted 20 years ago. We did not. We had a punch ballot system that was counted by machines. To my knowledge, I don't know that we've ever hand counted except maybe in the 1800s. I mean, we have not hand counted. That has not existed. That is untrue. And that is misinformation. Now, that's nothing against you. I know it's been put out there, and you got to believe when you hear it from what you believe to be a reliable source, but that did not exist. And so anyway, it's much more complicated than you think, and it may be more expensive than machine voting from what I've been able to research.
Yeah. So here, and I'll kick this off, even though Stones brought us right through that last topic into this one, which is great. The thing for me is this. When we made the vote to cancel the contract, which would be at the conclusion of the special election in Shasta Lake, which I know right now I believe they have a tentative winner. And what I really, really respect about Kathy Darling Allen, she said, it's not my job to call elections. It's my job to count votes. When all the votes are counted, I will tell you who the winner is, because I know she sticks to that, because I spent the general election in her office every other day learning the process, understanding how the state of California has not made it easier on the process. So I was in there, and then she texted me, and then, of course, I made my first call to Carolyn when I found out I won. Excuse me. So for me, with this canceling the Dominion contract, it's about fact finding, and you just mentioned it, Steve. You said, you know, there's been things put out there. You know, I'm at a point now personally that I don't believe anything I read or hear unless I mean I have to see it. I have to understand it. And so tomorrow, Kathy Darling, myself, Chairperson Jones, and an individual from out of the area is coming in, and we're going to discuss the finances and the actual process. Because and again, I'll say it very, very, when I say research, I'm Googling things. I'm making some phone calls. Some people are sending emails. I believe it could be far less expensive to actually hand count, like a lot less expensive. But then on the flip side, you hear when we had acting CEO Minturn before he retired said it's going to be over $1 million to, and it's like, hey, I don't think he's a liar. I don't think he's nefarious. I want to find out, and I actually want to get experts in the same room. And we have an expert in Kathy Darling. She's been our clerk for many years. And when her and I have discussions and dialogue, and she'll say, of all the supervisors, current or past, I've spent the most time with her. She'll tell you that. And I'm trying to understand it. And that's what I want. I want to get to the boiled down facts. And because I'm not going to debate with Kathy Darling about this, because I don't, it's like, you know, taking a knife to a gunfight. And it's not about fighting. It's about, can we look at it different ways?
So Kevin, I respect you for that too. You have several times stood up at the board meetings and stated that you needed more information. And clearly that has not been done by some of the other supervisors. Chris Kellstrom thought that we needed to go back to paper ballots. We've always had paper ballots. Now, the things I'm saying are not coming off of something I read or whatever. I have verified this with Kathy Darling's office, along with the I did talk also with the Assistant Secretary of State when she was up. And so two of the supervisors I know have made the vote to cancel the contract with Dominion while they were believing incorrect information. And so bothersome.
Well, one thing I want to say about Supervisor Kellstrom, and this goes for Supervisors Garmin and Rickard as well. I know what you're referring to when you said the paper ballots. A lot of times, because it's like the, if you've been in theater or whatever, and the curtain goes up, lights hit you, and some people just boom. And all of us have said something that it's not what we necessarily mean. And when he's saying by paper ballots, he's talking about I'm guessing because I've said the same thing. It's about actually being able to have a person vote and then have that same thing where it's tracked. And the one thing with Dominion with the barcodes, and this was an interesting thing to me, when we had that open house and I went and talked to Hart was just – they were bashing Dominion, but I get it. They're another vendor. It's like Pepsi saying Coke is terrible or Burger King saying McDonald's is trash. Yeah. So you take some of that with a grain of salt, but when you boiled it down and they talked about the barcodes and about not being able to track where those votes go, I think that's what Supervisor Kelster was probably referring to. I can't articulate that.
But I think it's very important that he be accurate. These are things he's stating to the public. And to state we need to get back to paper ballots when, in fact, we've always had paper ballots is just wrong.
Yeah, and some of the machines actually and again, I don't believe this is the version we have. We have an older version of Dominion, but actually some Dominion machines do create their own ballots as well. In certain circumstances, and I think that's what becomes troubling for me. And again, we're a county of 100 and Stones, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. So you know, we're a county of 111,000 registered voters. You know, I'm really curious of what the cost that would be. And again, you have some really big elections. But, you know, if they have a special election out there in Gateway School District, I mean, that might be 500, 1,500 votes. I mean, how hard. And, again, I'm not an expert, and that's why I would never tell Kathy Darling or her amazing staff. And I mean that, amazing staff. Now, there is one or two individuals there, like any organization, that I definitely get in a different line when I'm checking in because I get a different smile or I don't get a smile at all. But everyone is, for the most part, really, really polite, and I've enjoyed my interactions with them. So I can't begin to tell her or anybody else how their job should be done or how easy it is. I have to walk that out, and I've been doing this for 3 months. So I have to see it. And people say, well, I'll just make a decision. Well, I'm not going to rush into the decision because it matters to a lot of people. In my district, it's a very divided topic. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, you were mentioning in a small district a hand count might not be a big deal, but one of the hang-ups on that is the rights of the handicapped, whether they be deaf, blind, whatever. They have a right to be able to vote without anybody else knowing what their vote is. So the only way I know of that being able to be handled at this time is with machines. So if we have, and this will come up, I'm sure, in your future discussions, but if we have to have an agreement with a company with machines, then, you know, I'm just not sure where all that goes. The other thing is the idea that hand counting is going to be less money, that's actually not what I've read lately. Because you have to have, all, you know, counting 111,000 votes is a massive project, and you will have to have, I don't know, how many, several hundred, and for each of those, you have to have somebody monitoring and watching them, and then somebody watching the watchers. So it becomes a huge thing, and also, people that think they're going to have results the next day, that I think we're going to end up with a larger time period with hand counting.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Robert, do you have something?
Well, I just wanted to talk about the civility aspect of it. I think that we have two sides of which, you know, maybe 10% of each side are just bombing each other's village all the time. And that's not, it's not productive, it's not helpful, and it's not getting us to where we need to be. I think the thing to do is to enlist the aid of the people who are the stakeholders of whatever subject we're trying to manage. That would be, you know, Patrick calling Kathy and saying, hey, you know, let's get together and talk about this with these people, you know, versus what I perceive as sort of a lack of transparency and hiding things or putting, you know, Kathy's stuff to the end of the list.
Well, we're heading to a break.
Yeah.
We're heading to a break. We'll pick back up with that because one of the things, and that's one of the things that's really important to me, is not, especially this show, not, and I'm not saying you're disparaging Patrick or anybody else, because Patrick, I think, is doing a great job in terms of this is very polarizing right now, and we have to bring people together, and that's where I feel like my role, I'm really trying to work with him. I mean, because what I'll tell you is we have five supervisors that love this county, and how we love this county could be different, but we do all love this county, and we want what's best. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Stones, if you'd like, stay on, and we'll bring you right back into this.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least three realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Nobody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years
all right, well, we are back. And that was Smash Mouth All-Star. I just like that song. So they are actually coming and doing a couple concerts for a couple local school districts here in the coming months, May and June, Cascade and Gateway. So if Cascade is definitely District 5, parts of the Gateway School District are out Lake Boulevard, our District 1, so Smash Mouth will be doing a concert just for the kids and families of those two school districts, and I'm excited for that because kids and families, I think, need a break. Okay, we're back. We're talking about voting machines and voter integrity and the process, and here's what I want to say, and then we'll have Stones say a quick word. But for me, if I look at it like this, if we all, I think, want the same thing. We want everyone's vote to count. We want I want greater voter turnout. I want more people to get to the ballot box and make sure that they know
that their vote does count. I had a lot of people in the neighborhoods that I walked say it doesn't matter. I'm not going to vote, and that was hard for me because even if they weren't, let's say, going to vote for me, it was hard to feel people were so downtrodden in Shasta County. Now, if you don't want to vote for the president, it doesn't matter, whatever. But in Shasta County, it matters. I mean, we've had many elections decided by a few votes. Mine would be one of them, 90 votes. I mean, my friends call me landslide cry, but that's okay. And for me, I just want to run this down and run it aground and say, okay, well, let's just really see. Is it more expensive? Is it harder? Can it be done? Because everyone has their opinions, but I don't think anybody's doing that work to run that down. And I'll be the first to say, if it becomes tons more work and especially more expensive, I'm not on board for that because money could be spent in different ways. So, Stones, are you still there?
Closing comments for you guys. So when I say we are hand counting, I'm not talking Shasta County. I'm talking many jurisdictions throughout the country are hand counting. And as a matter, and hand counting, that can be the entire election. That can be the 1% audits, the random limiting audits. There's many different ways that hand counting occurs throughout this country. Missouri last year, a private group in Missouri printed a manual, and the title is Missouri Elections. Return to hand counting, 250 pages. It's a beautiful document, and apparently Missouri is returning to hand counting. So it details the procedures, the processes, et cetera. It's absolutely doable. Shasta County can do the same. There's many different scenarios, consolidating precincts, a fully fair and transparent election process that would include video cameras, live and archived. There's so many ways to actually do a hand count. Now, the machines, yes, there would need to be at least one machine for the disabled voters, and I'm getting that information.
All right, and let's bring it to a point because we got calls stacking up.
All right. Anyway, so return to hand counting. I think it can happen, and there's many scenarios, and I think we'd like to get the public on board. So
yeah, well, we're gonna run it down. I can tell you that. Steve?
Stones, a couple of things. Number one is I'm glad you called in. It's very important to get that perspective. Number of districts that are hand counting are, like you said, there's a few of them out there, but to my knowledge, none of them are over 10,000 people. Okay, in fact, most of them are much smaller than that. When you talk about having at least one disabled machine, you have to have, by law, one disabled machine per voting site. So that suddenly brings it into a pretty large scenario. That's all I can think of right now, but I think I had some other comments.
I appreciate the time, guys.
You bet. Thank you. One of the things for me, as we've looked at if anybody here that's listening or maybe as a caregiver or as a next-door neighbor, as a friend, I would really love someone to get a hold of me and especially even come on Thursday if you are a person that is handicapped in some capacity that needs extra help or needs what do you call it? It's you need special provisions.
Special accommodations.
Special accommodations. Thank you, Robert. Robert gets credit for that. I want to make sure Robert gets a gold star next to his name. So yes, if you need special accommodations, I'd like to get you. I'd like to get your input because I have seen, of course, every organization, you know, trots out people that make their case and say, oh, look, so-and-so is blind and they want this, or just in any endeavor. People always have their quote-unquote expert witnesses that prove their case. And I would just like to talk to average Jill, average Joe, who needs accommodations and get their input. Is it a big thing to them? Do we have a call, Liam?
We do not. It was okay. Someone who was they didn't really want to talk on air because I think it was a little scary. They were talking about Sharpies bleeding through on ballots.
Yes. I mean, again, this is the thing. I get that. It goes the other side. I've asked Kathy. She says it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. Other people says it's a big deal. So, again, this is where I think the conversation needs to be had, but I can't lead that conversation with a clerk who's been in office 20-some years. Steve, go ahead.
One comment on the handicap situation, and that is that, you know, when we think about it, it's like, well, what big deal? You know, somebody could help them do that. And because of the lack of privacy in a situation like that, as far as I know, the only way to truly accommodate them is through a machine.
Yeah, and that very well maybe. So let me ask you this question, like a hypothetical. Let's just say, and again, I don't. This is absolutely hypothetical. Like I don't have the answer, but let's say it costs, I don't know, but for argument's sake, and I don't even know what the number would be. Let's say $500,000 to have machines, whatever that looks like, and there is 50 voters that it's going to impact, possibly negatively, in terms of they're going to have a caregiver or somebody else help them with that vote, and there may be a secondary person. So is it 200,000? Is it 500,000? Is it a million? What's the number that says, hey, for these 50 voters, we're going to go this way because the county saves this much money, and it is 50 voters? And again, I don't have an opinion on it per se right now because the number wouldn't matter to me.
Yeah, I don't know the numbers, but the argument that I've heard on that is that even if it's one, then they need to be properly represented according to the law in the United States, and we're talking federal and state laws. So I don't think you're going to circumvent those and disenfranchise, I know, even one voter. Is that logical? Probably not, but still.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what the number is.
Well,
but it's really irrelevant.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things with HAVA, the Help America Vote Act. And as you read federal and state law about having an ombudsman or a representative help you, and the one of the, I won't say testimonies, but one of the videos I watched was somebody, you know, and they were actually kind of making light of it, and they were joking around and said, look, I have to have somebody help wipe my backside. Do you think I really care if they know who I voted for too? And, you know, and it was kind of, and again, they were there making the case for not, you know, have all these special accommodations. Cause one of the places I go is I look at some of these programs like in LA or I think maybe San Francisco where they were building apartments for the unhoused and they were doing it to the tune of like, you know, $800,000 to get one person off the street and they were doing it for 20 people. And you start to say, man, we're spending $20 million to get 30 people. Does that really pencil that's the best use of our funds, you know? And
well, Kevin, that happens over and over in all of the handicap laws, in my opinion. I see so many handicap spots that are never used. I see bumps I've got to take my cart across at the grocery stores because of the blind that I've never actually seen function with a blind person. I mean, you could go on to that. That's millions and millions and millions of dollars. I don't agree with it, but it is the law.
Yeah. Well, and that's my question is at what point do city council people, or let's just boil it even farther, like do citizens start to say, this doesn't make any sense. And again, that's where for me as a new supervisor, and you know, and you said it that I've been a tie breaking vote a little bit. I'm just trying to get all the information and it is drinking from a fire hose. Not that I'm nervous or afraid of that or intimidated by that. I mean, I have a you know, I represent world-class talent in Reading. I mean, and you know, I have multi-gold medalists coming here, but there's other people that are music producers that have some of the top music artists in the world coming to Reading to cut an album. I mean, there's a lot of people in Reading that do a lot of things, so I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying for me, this is something that I think we have to just keep the conversation. Robert, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. I'm just a big fan of the rule of law, and if our disagreement is with the legislature, the lousy California Democrat legislature, which is completely bought off by special interest groups, and Gavin Newsom, who unfortunately was not recalled, then our battle is not on a local level, it's on the state level. Our battle is within the local level, but it's also on the state level. And big fan of the rule of law, those who have been duly elected have a right and are the experts and are the people that we chose to lead us. Whether you like it or not, these are the laws, and you have to abide by them.
I think the laws you're talking about, for the most part, are federal.
Yeah, and I think for us, and this is one again, this is the thing about Shasta County. Yeah, I believe Shasta County is different, can continue to be different, but there's going to be certain truths that I think we have to really hold tight to. And if we're waiting for the legislature, again, that's what it's going to have to be. But in the meantime, I think we have to dig our heels in and make sure people's voices feel heard. And the only way I feel like I can make sure people's voices are heard, at least in District 1 in Shasta County, is to listen and provide opportunities to listen. That's why I'll be here in 2 weeks because it's going to be every other Sunday at 8 a.m. And I know this town hall on Thursday isn't going to be the only. We're going to do many of them. And I know that, there's so much. Make sure you make that town hall if you're District 1. Please remember that you do have to show proof of residency. Steve, Robert.
Can I move to District 1?
You just do it legally. And anything you guys ever need, I'm available. Spread that word. Thank you so much. We're going to be taken out by Twisted Sister. We're not going to take it anymore. And I think that's what's important. We just we all listen to each other, get along, and make a difference.
Thanks.
Have a great week.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.